Hey, let's go. Let's do it again. Episode 20 of The Blaze. It is for our title sponsor, Rivershore Golf Links. And boy, we're getting close to golf season, aren't we? I saw a video of Kevin, the GM, hitting a tee shot off the 10th, which he called his first shot of the season. But maybe the Kamloops season. He's only a couple weeks removed from some Mexico golf, but great to see us getting closer, and who knows when exactly we'll be ready to go at Rivershore, but we'll keep you posted on that front. I had anxiety watching him hit that shot on 10, because anybody that knows that hole knows that is a really difficult risk-reward tee shot, and you have to hit it straight. You have to hug the water as close as possible. Anyways, that's coming up here a little bit later on in the spring. Episode 20, it's a good one, folks. We got a great show. Our feature guest coming up in about 10 minutes, a former Blazer with a long pro career. He now resides in Kelowna. Jared Allen will stop by. You'll want to listen to this chat. He's engaging. A lot of talk about hockey, but more so just family and life. Again, that's coming up in a short few minutes. We got our regular features today. We got buying and selling, where we'll talk about a couple of national sports figures we were chatting with this week. What else do we got? Kamloops is adding an outdoor rink, a massive project. Daryl Sador showed up at council on Tuesday to weigh in on what he thinks the money should be spent on. More on that potential CHL NCAA agreement here, if we have time. Stay tuned. This one from front to back this week. It is episode 20 for Rivershore Golf Links. Okay, as always, we start with the opener for Bry's Automotive and Customs. I believe Danny and Kevin are somewhere south of the border right now. Not sure where they are, if they're on the run or what's going on, but Bry's Automotive and Customs, specializing in car and pickup truck repairs, restorations, car repainting, custom paint and body work. They'll do custom engine work, full service automotive repairs, over 60 years of automotive knowledge. They're in the old Knowles Exhaust Building, just off Tronquil, sort of tucked in behind sort of Mr. Lube area there. So it's Bry's Automotive and Customs, and we hope to have Danny back on the show. She tells me she wants to watch a period from the broadcast booth. I don't know how exciting that actually is. It's maybe a nice thought, but maybe not as exciting as you think it is, Danny, I guess we could say. So we'll see on that. So since we last spoke, how about this team? They're in the midst of six wins in their last eight games. Three games this past week, and they're playing well. It is their best stretch of the year. We'll start with that 4-1 win over Wenatchee last Friday night. Final game of the season series. Blazers really dominated stretches of that game. And they take the lead of the third period, and Wenatchee starts to push. They get the goaltender out, and we saw the very rare own goal. The own goal against. And I can tell you that I don't think I've ever seen that live. It was Kenta Isogai, who is a great player, tried to pass the puck back to the line, back to the points. It split the 2D all the way into the own net. They credited Logan Barros with a goal. I thought maybe for a second it could have been Dylan Ernst, but it's an own goal. And again, never seen that before. That capped the 4-1 win. Sunday, they're in Prince George against a really good division-leading Cougars team, and they were in at least position to win that game. Didn't happen for them in the end, but they were up 3-2. They had a power play to extend that to 4-2. Couldn't get it to go there. I think there was a goalpost hit on that power play. And right out of the penalty box, PG sprung on a 2-on-0. They would tie the game and ride momentum onto the win from there. But Blazers, for the most part, played a decently strong game. They were outshot handily, but overall, again, you're in a position to win that game. You want to see them close that out. Wednesday night, Seattle Thunderbirds in town. Blazers, another game where they owned long stretches of that game. As for maybe 5 minutes to close out the second period when Seattle had a push, I think the Blazers really like their 60-minute effort. Dylan Ernst, that's three straight wins at home for the goaltender. Just 20 shots against, though, on that one. So a bit of a easier night. And you look at his last three games, 1.33 goals against average, a 956 save percentage, a mature game in the crease here lately. And I asked Sean Clouston about the Ernie effect in the last three home ice wins.
I think it's a two-way street. I think we're playing better in front of him. He's playing better for us. And you work together, work off each other. And you know, when the forwards are selling out and blocking some shots, and D-men are doing a little bit better job in front of the net, it gives him confidence to keep battling for the guys. He makes a big save, and the guys are excited.
Also this week, a proposed $5.4 million outdoor rink at Riverside Park. It would pass through council onto the next step. Did hear some opposition from the community on this one. Daryl Sador actually showed up for the public portion of the meeting Tuesday and representing not only himself, but speaking for Kamloops Minor Hockey Association. He is a member, so he has some, he's invested in this for sure. But he wants, you know, the city to invest that money elsewhere.
It's hard and it's frustrating since over 10 years on the docket's been, we talk about recreation facilities and we all know we need it and build Kamloops or the committee that's formed. That's great. But we're in a situation where we need a Band-Aid.
Daryl went on to say families are relocating to find ice time in other cities or communities. Should be clear on some things here. $5.4 million. All that money is from a provincial grant, a provincial budget surplus handed down to the communities. It's supposed to be a free facility for all to use. I would expect there would be some operating costs to it. It is artificial ice. So everyone says, yeah, an outdoor rink will never fly in Kamloops, but it's artificial ice, so the city says it can run efficiently up to 8 degrees outside. Daryl continued at the meeting.
I guess for 6 weeks, if we have that ice for $5.4 million, we're losing 365 days of trying to keep some families around, putting money where Kamloops citizens need it to eventually get to where we need to be. Let's face it, we're not Kelowna. Let's be Kamloops.
Councillor Kelly Hall. He was in favor of this. He addressed those concerns about a lack of available ice for minor hockey kids.
And I hear somebody like Mr. Sador, I hear the passion that he has, you know, for youth hockey and the need for ice. And it's coming. And it's coming in the form of Build Kamloops.
So the master plan will kick in here. The master plan really kind of kicks the can down the road for a few years, tackling priorities. And I'm not sure, like, indoor rinks are, like, listed in Kamloops as a top priority. It's one of the priorities, but there's a few before that in the recreation master plan. So we'll see how this all shakes down. But lots to discuss this week. It's the opener for Bry's Automotive and Customs. Okay, let's go on the move for Thompson Valley Charters. TVC needs bus drivers, everybody. Thompson Valley Charters looking for a few good men or women with the right licenses to help them out. They have the hardware. They have plenty of business. Maybe a driver or two would help them out. You can find your ticket to adventure, tvcbus.ca. I believe Roger will be driving for the Blazers this weekend. So we'll welcome him back into the mix. Okay, so we've used this segment this season to talk about trades or potential trades. It's on the move, of course. And we talked a lot specifically around the trade deadline. We did a winners and a losers of the trade deadline segment. Not sure if that was in this segment or maybe it was like a buying and selling type thing that we do later on in the show. We mentioned Seattle not moving out some of their star power, some proven veterans, with teams knocking on the door to add some of these players that are battle-tested. And trust me, there were teams looking to add that experience. Now, Matt Audette, the head coach of the Thunderbirds, was in town Wednesday. And maybe he listens to the Blaze. And hey, why not? It's got Blazer talk, but of course, lots of WHL talk across the board. Matt last night wanted to comment on the lack of trades the team made and the reasoning behind it.
You were left with some of those players that perhaps some teams would have been interested in. We know what the Blazers did, but you know, talking about the Jeremy Hansels of the world and the Nico Mijatovics here, I don't know if you were in the office to say, I need these guys here, but a nice, I guess, gift to have them still remain for a playoff push.
Yeah, for sure. I think what happened at the trade deadline, we were quite comfortable with. I remember I think I heard a couple of your comments there on the trade deadline about, you know, if we don't make the playoffs, we'd have nothing to show for it. But, you know, lots to show for it with, you know, our season and banners and you know, a nice piece of hardware, you know, and a ring coming our way. So, you know, these type of players are legacy players for us. You know, when we win a championship, they you know, have a bond with our team, and you know, want to see these guys finish in T-Bird uniforms. And not only that, great mentors for our young team coming up, and you know, those guys are going to lead the way for our young guys.
Okay, so fair point. Yeah, fair point. That's all well and dandy. Four teams were at the Memorial Cup, including Seattle. Three were league champs, right? Seattle, Peterborough, Quebec. All getting hardware, getting their banners. Those other two teams, Peterborough and Quebec, two of the most active teams around the trade deadline. Both replenished with some of those veterans that were league champions. They were very, very active, just like the Blazers were. Those players in high demand. They're thought highly of. But Seattle saying, oh, we're going to keep these guys to pass on the torch. And I get that part, but certainly wasn't the norm around the CHL, at least for the other three teams at the Memorial Cup. And Seattle could very well go on to make the playoffs. They sit behind Tri, Spokane right there. Blazers could also make the playoffs too if they keep up this pace, six wins in their last eight games. So we did talk about this last night. You still, I think, at some point have to replenish your draft picks. We said on the air, you look at the draft boards, and we mentioned Seattle used a lot of assets last year, like the Blazers, like Winnipeg. So you look at their next, three drafts, first four rounds in their next three drafts. That's a total of 12 picks of those four rounds. Seattle has just four of those 12 picks available to them. Eight are unavailable. Seattle valuing legacy players of a veteran presence, and that's their prerogative. Just wanted to pass along that counterpoint to our deadline day thoughts, winners and losers. And that is on the move for Thompson Valley Charters. Okay, feature interview time. Hydra Power Wash. Hydra Power Wash, mobile pressure washing services. They service Kamloops and the BC interior, and soon will be doing exterior window cleaning and full house washes. Moss removal from roofs. Springtime is coming. You might want to book in and get Hydra Power Wash over to help you out with all that spring cleaning outdoors. Text Christopher 250-851-1072. Find him on Facebook, Instagram at Hydra Power Wash. And I would say he's pretty excited these days. He's death metal or something. I forget what it's called, but he's a fan, and his brother is too. Coming up in Penticton, I think it's like Mastodon and Lamb of God are playing. So I saw that announcement. I had to send him a quick text, and he said they were all over it at Hydra Power Wash. Let's get into it this week. Hey, great guest here on The Blaze this week. And if you look at his Hockey DB, or maybe your Elite Prospects guy, he has one of the most interesting profiles and just the careers that a guy could have. And he spent 4 years with the Blazers from 1998 to 2002. Now resides in Kelowna. Please welcome Jared Allen to The Blaze this week. Jared.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you, track you down. You have just an unbelievable story and career to tell. And I don't really know where to start here, to be honest with you. But you've been back, you know, from time to time around the Blazers. I've seen you at the golf tournament a couple of times. So I guess you're still sort of in the peripheral and sort of part of things with the Blazers.
Yeah, I follow along. I actually just recently reached out to them to see if they wanted any potential skills coaching as something I can help out with now that I'm so close. But, you know, it's fun. It's a little disappointing. Last year, I didn't make it to their final game there in the Memorial Cup. I was hoping to see that one, and then ended up getting there for the last two games, which for me wasn't very exciting because it had nothing to do with the Blazers. So,
yeah.
Even though I was disappointed, I'm sure the boys in the room and the organization, the people at Kamloops were feeling it a lot harder than I was, but I think it makes a big statement to see what they did last year and then know that they're in good hands. And, you know, I know they're going through a tougher tougher season this year, but that's part of the sport. And with that builds good character and growth within the organization to find the right players to make the fit and have the players that are there to develop and turn the team into something special again.
Have to say, you know, I did some research and, you know, I go through your Instagram account and it's like if Abercrombie and Fitch had an Instagram account, this is what it would probably look like, I think.
Yeah, I try and, you know, I try and show I've always had a close relationship with the fans. I've actually been lucky that I've never been in a target, you know, for the most part of the keyboard warriors. Most people appreciate my vulnerability and transparency as a hockey player and as a person. And I'm a huge family guy and very proud of my wife and my kids and the career I had. And you know, the reality, I know what happened in my career and I'll take accountability for some. And then there's some other aspects, obviously, with politics and those types of things where, you know, I've done a pretty good job of keeping my mouth shut just to prevent drama. But I focus on the positive and don't have the woe is me mentality. So I'm a very, very positive person. Look at the stuff I do have and not focus on the stuff that didn't work out or I don't have.
Well, I'm always looking at the golf foursomes for the Blazer tournament, and I'm hoping I'm not with you because you're the first guy to get the shirt off at the golf tournament. I'm thinking I can't follow that up here. So
yeah, I'm a big believer. If you're outside, you should be allowed to be in a bathing suit. It's, you know, I'd love for somewhere to open a golf course where, you know, everybody can feel comfortable in their own skin. It's not so serious and you're there to have a good time. You know, prime example is when I was in Germany, it's they have spas there and, you know, obviously it's a different culture where some of them are fully naked and some aren't. And it's, you just appreciate people for who they are. There's no judgment on people's appearance. And I think that North America could take a little bit of that into our world and not focus so much on what you look like and just enjoy being outside and comfortable and having a good time.
Wow, there you go. New perspective. Let's talk about your Blazer time here. You played a couple of games, you know, coming in 98 just to get a feel for things. And all of a sudden, your rookie season, that's a pretty good team. And you know, you play a ton of games at 16, 55, and you walk into a team that has aspirations of being a WHL champion. What was that first year under Mark Habscheid like?
Oh, it was good. You know, I learned a lot. I think... I don't think I was, you know, fully maximized my potential and it was recognized at the end of the year and Javi and I had a good conversation about it. Because at the start of the year, I was playing with some of the guys that were more expected to put up numbers and I was doing fairly well with them. And then, you know, things changed and I became part of the energy line with Paul Denisette and Brett Trainee. And we had a ton of fun playing together. You know, we brought energy every game and brought the youthful enthusiasm and pushed the older guys to keep energized, drew a lot of penalties and had a lot of fun with it. But I do look back and think that I could have been a bigger contributor in that rookie season. But again, that's just part of the hockey era back then where, you know, you have to kind of play that role first and then get your chance the following year. And so now in today's game, I'm actually happy to see NHL players, young kids getting the opportunity to play instead of earn their minutes right from the get-go and give them a chance to play. And then if they don't succeed, then take their minutes away.
You know, it's fitting you're a skills coach now because that was your game. You know, when I always, you know, I wasn't in Kamloops at the time, but I was following the league and part of things out east. And I look at those Blazer teams, like your era, you know, the 99 to 2002, and there was some playoff success for sure in 99 in your first season. And then that Blazer roster was sort of like there were so many players with individual talents like yourself, you know, Scotty Upshaw was breaking in, and Eric Christensen, like so much talent, but just maybe the postseason, it just never kind of came together for you the rest of the way there.
Yeah. I hate saying this because I'm a big believer. This had kind of haunted me in my career, but I made a comment to the Vancouver newspaper when Evason got hired there, just saying that, there's got to be accountability from both the players and the coaching staff. And I felt that in the playoffs, when we played Kelowna in the first round and got swept, every time they put their checking line against us, we'd get pulled off the ice. So we only played like 9 to 12 minutes some game and games, and you have to trust your top players to go out there and outplay the offensive or the checking line from the opposing team. So I'll take accountability on my end. In the minutes our line, Scotty Upshaw, Colton Orr, and I did play, we didn't put the puck in the net like we were supposed to, but I also think that you have to trust your best players to go out and outplay and compete the other team's checking line.
What a year for you individually, 2000-2001. You put up 108 points. You were right there in the scoring race, which was pretty crazy to watch, like Justin Mapletoft, Lane Homer. That year, I know playoffs didn't go very well, but that was sort of your, I would say, your coming out party a little bit, for sure, when you put up over 100 points in the WHL.
Yeah, actually, the funny part is the year before, in my draft year before I got injured, I actually had 23 points in my first 9 games to lead the league in points, and then I ran into some injury trouble, and then, you know, even a lot of Blazer fans don't know this to this day, but I played the whole season after my ankle injury. I played the whole season with an avulsion fracture in my ankle and torn ligaments, where the physiotherapist, Ken Wagner, had to tape my ankle up like a cast before the game and then cut it off in between periods to get some circulation back and then tape it up like a cast again. So I had no mobility in my foot, and you know, I was always the guy that didn't like excuses and wanted to play through anything. And you know, when you look back, you don't have regrets, but I think in that situation, I think I would have made a different decision instead of rushing to get drafted and just, you know, taking the time needed and get the surgery needed for my ankle at that time to continue making a statement. But then again, that season happened, and then getting drafted, you build your confidence, you go to your first NHL camp. I had a really good first camp with Colorado, came back really confident, and then wanted to take that energy into my junior season, and it rewarded myself with a good season. But unfortunately, like for me, I'm not satisfied if the team doesn't do well.
You got your first taste of Europe, which you'd spend a lot of time in when you represented Canada at the World Juniors in 2002. That tournament was in the Czech Republic at the time. I'm sure that was an unbelievable event. I know it didn't end the way you wanted to in a gold medal game where you're leading the Russians.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. So how often do you think about that?
I think about it all the time. You know, I tell everybody, like, you know, I was fortunate to play in the NHL and score at that level, but that World Junior experience was something incredible. And I think it was, even kids today won't get the same experience that we had because there was no social media. So we'd wake up every morning and the publicist team would have emails for all of us, and they'd print off all the positive comments and fan support we were getting from back home in Canada. And we'd get to read that every morning and then go out and play well. And then, you know, Kamloops equipment guy there, Toledo, he was the team energy bug there, where he got the jump around going and got everybody loose and relaxed and excited to play every game. But to see, you know, the top players in Canada come together like that and play hard and then get up 3-1 in the finals and, you know, let that slip away and have a 5-4 loss was tough. And that feeling lasts forever, because, you know, you're right there to be one of the teams to go down in history as winning the gold medal. But it was an incredible experience and something I'll always appreciate and probably hold very high in my hockey memories.
You know, I look at where you jump from there, the LA Kings, and you have that look to you. You know, like you look like a player, and you kind of have, you know, all the attributes for the NHL game. I see 17 games of the Kings in 2002-03, and then down into the AHL. When you look back on those 17 games, what do you think about now? Do you think about what could have been? Are you feel fortunate, Jared? Like, where are you at on that?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you always look at the fortunate side of things. Like, someone actually yesterday was 21 years ago that I scored my first NHL goal and ended up having actually 2 goals and an assist that game. But times were different then. Like, I played average like 4 to 6 minutes a game, playing with 2 tough guys on the fourth line as a skilled guy. And you know, now these young players get the opportunity to play with skill right away. I hear from people all the time that I was born 10, 15 years too early.
Yeah.
Because of how creative I was as a player. And I'm big on that today. And you know, one thing about me when I played, I wasn't creative just to be creative. I was creative to turn something that didn't seem available into an availability. So turning nothing into something. I was very passionate about finding ways to create opportunities for my line mates because I was such a setup guy. I knew how to score too, but I loved to play make. And, you know, there's some clips on YouTube and different places of me making kick passes, even at the pro level. And in North America, I would get in trouble for it. It wasn't to just kick a puck. It was because I didn't have the option to get the puck there any other way. And so I look back and I think, you know, I wonder what it would have been like if you know, the game was played then the way it is now. And I didn't have to gain 20 pounds. I just had to be strong and quick and agile and play heads up hockey with creativity and show up to work every day. And, but at the same time, I was, you know, I think I grew up in an era where as a young player, you actually were excited to be around these NHL players. I find now you see a lot of these younger kids where they think these older guys should be excited about them. And that's not all of them, but it didn't matter if I was in the dressing room with Sean Podine or Joe Sakic when I was with Colorado. I thought it was pretty damn cool. So those experiences and having been part of, you know, just Colorado's training camp where Ray Bourque's there, Sakic, Forsberg, Tanguay, Hayduke, you know, Patrick Waugh, all these Adam Foote, all these Adam Dedmarsh, you name it. You got all these big name players where I got to sit in a room with them and chat and learn. And I don't think there's too many players that really get to experience a team like that with that many legends and learn from them and just have conversations and just have the fun I had.
I would think, and I'm glad you brought that up about the 10, 15 years, maybe too early, because now I think you would have just ripped social media. Like you would have set it on fire. You know, some of the skilled plays, and then, you know, you put yourself out there a lot. Like now that's celebrated. Like, you know, I think about how, you know, you could have embraced the style it is right now and really made a name for yourself here. Have you thought about, you know, maybe just the kind of the total package in that way?
Yeah, like it's you always. I mean, you're always going to think what could have been and the differences and all that kind of stuff. And you know, when I played in Kamloops, Dino would tell me not to try and go through guys' legs in practice when that was part of my game. And it's so with my kids now, the hard part with coaching now is, you know, the Michigan goes viral, and don't get me wrong, it's one heck of a skill, and I'd be doing it too. If I had the chance, but the problem is nowadays, because of social media, kids are only focused on the highlight and not like where I was different. I was what can create more opportunity for me on top of having the basic skill set that will help me get to the next level and achieve something. Like it's, I always tell the kids, you don't eat your dessert before dinner. And I call the Michigan the dessert, that you need to learn how to do a wraparound. You need to learn how to, skate behind the net with your head up and look to the slot and find the opportunities. And if it's not there, then the puck's up on your stick and you're doing the Michigan. And so it's finding that balance now where I feel like I had it. I knew when to be creative and when to add those elements, but also how to focus on the traditional parts of the games that are always going to stick around.
You had a long, you know, career, and we were talking off the top. It was cut short maybe to COVID sort of forced you into retirement, maybe a little bit early with a wrist injury. But you spent a ton of time in Europe. Did you get married over in Europe, or what was sort of your timeline there?
Yeah, I was engaged to my wife, and we ended up actually getting married in Kelowna in our kitchen during COVID once we had our daughter. And it was kind of, you know, there's things, the exciting part about Europe is that, the fans there are all cheering for somebody. It's not a entertain a client and just chat and sit in the stands and try and win a client over. It's, you know, like you kind of see here in North America until the playoffs start, but it's, the fans are going crazy the whole time. It's a loud atmosphere. There's chanting going on. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that my wife did get to see me play, and that she got to experience the European lifestyle with me. There's parts of my European career, like I got asked to play in the Spangler Cup, and my Swedish team didn't allow it, which was extremely frustrating because I would have missed a couple games. And I think that's the biggest honor as a Canadian player playing in Europe is to be recognized to play for the Spangler Cup. But the memories and experiences I got to have just being in Europe and the embrace I got from my team and like the fans in Sweden where I was something pretty incredible. And you know, I got to experience things in regards to, you know, my family life that I don't think any hockey player or athletes ever experienced in the tribute they did for my mom when she passed away, right when she got sick. And then again, when she passed away was probably the biggest highlight of my hockey career because it symbolized the type of person I am. And I always stress to the kids I work with today that, you know, you're not a hockey player, you're you first and you play hockey. And I was lucky enough to have parents that raised me to be me first and that I played hockey. Cause I think with all the things that went on in my career and all that stuff, it would have been easy for me to, you know, end up in a darker place. But because I was raised the way I was, I didn't identify as a hockey player. So having that vulnerability and transparency in Sweden, you know, was kind of what the fans noticed, not just what I was doing on the ice, and then embraced me that way and gave a special tribute to my mom, which was pretty amazing.
You were very open about that, going back about 3-4 years now, where, you know, you sort of chronicled it a little bit and kind of, you know, captured what was going on with your mom as you were in Europe. And it was all out there for social media. So I'm sure it was, you know, kind of an emotional journey for the family at that point.
Yeah, it was tough. Like I had an AC sprain in my shoulder and we just started playing playoffs. And it was March 14th, the day before my birthday. And I saw it. My parents wanted to call me that day. And so I was out with a teammate and I was like, yeah, I got to get home. My parents are going to call. And then I missed the call and I saw it wasn't just a call to me. It was a call to all my siblings. And we knew my mom had a doctor's appointment. So, the morning of my birthday, we woke up and then found out that she had a 3% chance of living because she was battling pancreatic cancer. So, I remember scoring a goal and assist or two goals or something. I think it was a goal and assist. In her first playoff game, and the interviewer asked me, like, how did you compete like you did and play like you did with the injury you have? And I said, and that's when I came out and just said, you know, my mom's fighting a battle with her life. The least I can do is deal with the pain I have right now to make her proud. And kind of that's where it kind of took off, and then the fans really embraced it. And then I got back to Sweden to play our first home game, and at the end of the game they had a big banner in the big fan cheering section that said, "Win this fight, Mrs. Allen." And then, you know, went home and spent time with her after the playoffs. And she passed. And then my first game back, they had a big banner that said, "Rest in peace, Patricia Allen." And, you know, the picture went viral of me standing in front of it and pointing up at my mom. And I think it's those moments where, you know, you're so far away from home, but you feel like you're being supported by, you know, thousands of people who genuinely care about you as a person, not just for what you've done for their hockey club.
And I don't think that would have happened, said you were playing pro in North America. It's just something that maybe wouldn't be embraced, right? Like, maybe, you know, the difference in cultures allows, you know, a player and their family situation to be maybe a little bit more highlighted than it was, let's say, if you were playing in the American Hockey League.
Yeah, like I think a big part of it is also a little bit is how you present yourself off the ice as a player. Like in Europe, they're excited to see you and they'll ask for autographs, but it's not, they're not going to sit there and just chat hockey with you the whole time. And, you know, I made friends with people just, you know, they'd ask for an autograph and then you just start chatting and then they'd chat about life and then you'd see them at the coffee shop all the time. And it wasn't, hey, how's hockey going, or what happened last night, or whatever. Whereas in North America, you know, someone meets, you know, a hockey player, it's always hockey, hockey, hockey. It's not, oh yeah, so where'd you grow up, or whatever, and just that kind of stuff, because they don't want to invade that kind of space. But over there, it's kind of more laid back in regards that, you know, it's not, one, they're not asking for your autograph so they can sell it on eBay. They actually are a fan and genuinely want to get to know you as a person. And so, yeah, there's that cultural difference. And then obviously here it's massively popular that you do understand why you know, people are excited to meet certain players and whatnot. But yeah, it's definitely a really cool experience. And I think one that every, even players who are on there, you know, think they're done in North America, even if they're older, to go over there and just play 1 year just to experience it.
Yeah, great stops in Sweden, Switzerland, then later Germany and England, where you finished up. Your dad, two kids. Tell us about your family.
Yeah, I married my wife, Jordan. She's a small town Saskatchewan girl.
Oh, whereabouts? Just for my own knowledge, whereabouts?
Asquith.
Okay, so outside of Saskatoon, right there, I guess.
You got it. Yeah, very small town. Yeah. So she grew up barrel racing, playing hockey. Doing all that stuff. She's very independent, driven, passionate, competitive, and a very loving wife and mom. And I'm super appreciative that she's in my life. And then we welcomed a beautiful little girl named Rowan Patricia Jean Olland. So she's got my mother's middle name and then my wife's grandma's middle name in there, who's an absolute sweetheart and very kind, super polite, even though she's still young. But has a spicy side to her too, which I don't want to take away from her. She's got to manage it. And then I got a son named Hayes, Edward Wesley. So after my dad, and then my wife's uncle, and he's just over a year old, turned a year in December, and he's built like the Michelin man. He's a little tank and always happy. He likes to cruise around and climbs on everything and keeps us. We thought Rowan was busy, but he's very busy but both very happy, healthy kids. We're lucky that way. And you know, it's fun to be on the other side of the lens now and understand why, you know, parents act the way they do and worry. And my daughter just had a fever for quite a while. So sleep was lacking because you always worry more when it's your kids. But she's good now. And we're just excited to get them into sports and, you know, keep them active and as best friends. So it's even though I'm older now, I still try and take care of myself, and my wife really does a good job of taking care of herself and staying healthy and working out all the time. That we think it's important for our kids to see that active lifestyle, especially in a generation of technology and video games and all these things, you know, I didn't tend to focus on so much. So we got a new puppy as well. He's 9 weeks old. He's a Bernese mixed with a poodle. So
he's going to be a big Bernadoodle for you then.
Man. Yeah, we got a mini one. So it'll be about 45, 50 pounds. And
okay.
His name's Bernie. So Bernie the Bernadoodle. And then we have a 7-year-old Maltese poodle mix who looks like a little teddy bear but has a ton of energy, named Finn. So the family's complete now, and we're happy and excited and looking forward to see which avenue they take in if it's sports or arts or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's great. You know, boy, 9-week-old puppy. You got your hands full right now. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Two kids. Wow. Your teaching skill, you're working with a U13 zone team, and you're still relatively young. Like, you're an 82, so you're like 41 right now, I guess, or so?
Yeah, I turned 42 in about a month.
Okay.
Five weeks.
You got a long life ahead of you. You got a lot of, you know, aspirations probably. And is that with hockey? Is that sort of the path you want to continue down?
Yeah, like I took my real estate course, and I've always told myself I don't want to be working all the time and not focused and present with my family. So I decided that, you know, I got asked to start coaching about 4 years ago with younger players. So I started doing that, and then I started to really focus on – I find the biggest problem with hockey today is that kids don't have a individual – characteristic when they play now, that coaches that come in at a young age are more focused on winning and building structure within a group of 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, that it's all about structure and less about the development of the actual skills. So when I was young, you know, you go to a hockey tournament, not to sound arrogant, but people would be like, hey, you guys got to see this Jared Allen kid play. You don't hear that much anymore when you go to these tournaments. There's no real standouts. It's very rare because it's all structure, structure, structure. And so I'm trying to teach kids the game, but also how to make their own decisions and understand IQ. There'll be structure involved, but not to the point of where they look like robots. Because I think what's missing is the decision-making and the trust in the players to and kids to figure it out on their own. And a prime example is sometimes I run skill skates for the 8-year-olds and I'll put a drill together and the coaches want me to blow it down and say, hey, they're chipping it off the wall too hard. Huh. And I say, give them time. They'll figure it out. Yeah. Like, you have to quit coddling to them and let them learn for themselves. They're not stupid. And, you know, they do. And so I've taken a big, big chunk of my time researching the new era and how to teach the skills and all these different things and teach them the things I wished I learned when I was younger, like how to stay low when I come out of turn and move my feet, stopping in front of the net, eyes up all the time, scanning, looking the zones, all those things. And because as you get older, when they're like, okay, you got to come out of your turn with your feet moving, you're built a habit. It's hard to break it. So I want the kids to have their individuality, learn to play as a team. Like Mike Smith, my assistant coach, and our big philosophy is compete consistently and play connected and have fun out there. And I think it's important because a lot of people are paying their kids for points now or goals. And you know, people want to see the kids that work the hardest, which is lacking in today's world. The effort is limited in the younger generation. So it's trying to keep them accountable, but also not have them fear me. I'm not a yeller. I'll challenge you and that stuff. And then I'm fortunate enough that I get to also work with the NHL players here in the summer. And, you know, I worked with Ethan Bear for about 20 ice times to help get him back to Washington. And it's been a lot of fun for me.
You got a great story to tell, and I kind of like the vibe of sort of you played in an old school environment, but now trying to be a bit of a new school innovator when it comes to the game and the kids. And I think you're right. You talk about no one's maybe there to see a individual player anymore or get a lot of talk and the structure that's involved in the game. I really enjoyed this chat, Jared, and I want to wish you the best. That I know you're just sort of, you know, starting to blossom in the coaching career now, and we look forward to seeing where your journey takes you. And I really appreciate you spending a half an hour with us here on the podcast here today.
Yeah, you bet. I'll actually be in Kamloops in March. I'm looking to book ice to run some camps for the spring break. So maybe we can meet up and touch base or chat then too.
All right. Well, if we're golfing here, maybe we get the shirts off here too at some point. So
sounds good. I'm always game on for that.
Okay, and speaking of Mastodon, it's a prospect corner for Mastodon Equipment. Now you can piece it all together here, right? Mastodon Equipment Repairs, your mobile servicing and repair specialists, from coming up with preventative maintenance programs, aerial work platform inspections, pre-purchase inspections. Again, I'll stress that's very important. They do emergency repairs. They've got you covered. Go big. Go with Mastodon. And today we'll feature just the top prospect points-wise lately here. He's just on fire. He's 16-year-old Tommy Lafreniere. Eighth-round pick of the hockey team. And he's been really the hottest of the Blazer prospects right now. Yale Academy, U18. And you look at his body of work of the season, 26 games at that level, 24 goals, 24 assists, 48 points, comes off a 6-point game in a come-from-behind victory last week. Scored 3 times, 3 assists. They came back and won like 9-8 in that game. And you look at his last body of work, like recently, his last 10 games, Tommy's on a tear. 11 goals, 12 assists, 23 points in his last 10 games, playing at the top level U18. So hopefully, Tommy, we can see him here at some point late in the season to come in and show what he has. 16-year-old, he has a really bright future ahead of him. And again, the Blazers' 8th-round pick for Tommy Lafreniere. I think he's going to be a good one. That is Prospects Corner for Mastodon Equipment and Repair. Okay, let's do some buying and selling. Kyle Panasuk, Westwind Royal LePage Realty Kamloops, another guy excited for the golf season. Royal LePage, Westwind Realty, trusted real estate professionals. Kyle, sell, 250-819-9332. Also find him on Instagram. Okay, first up, buying.
Bye.
The outdoor rink project at Riverside Park. Some aren't good with it. I am, based on the fact that the $5.4 million funding is from provincial grant money allocated for projects like this. The artist renditions look pretty cool. I'd use it. I'd go skating on it. It's not a rink with boards. It's like a skating surface, an oval that'll have a pathway. I don't mind it. I'm on board with it. We'll buy that. Hey, I'm buying
bye.
Blake Svetlakov. He's on a big time roll, as they say. Sweaty is hot. Get it? 11 games now as a Blazer. 2 goals, 8 assists for 10 points, so nearly a point a game player. He's already surpassed his numbers in Lethbridge this season. He played 37 games there. But the 10 points he's put up, already more than he did in Lethbridge all season long. 20-year-old sets a good example. Very mature player. We got to buy Blake Svetlakov, right? And buying Dylan Ernst. He is on the best stretch of his season. It's happening right now. 3 straight wins on home ice hitting into the weekend. And what a 956 save percentage in those 3 wins, only allowing 4 goals in those 3 games. So best stretch of the year, no doubt, Dylan Ernst, the Blazers, who have won 6 of 8. Okay, I'm selling.
Sell, sell, sell.
Selling. Couple of national sports figures today. We'll start with Frank Cervalli, who I have a ton of respect for. He's younger than me. He's carved out a career as an NHL insider. He flipped to the Daily Faceoff. He's actually done some, he's been on our shows here at Radio NL. Very knowledgeable guy. But took a run at Sidney Crosby, of all people, over his all-star participation or lack thereof. Says Sidney couldn't, anybody that was not Sidney Crosby couldn't get away with what he, missed the draft portion. He was spotted on some outdoor rink, which I think is pretty cool. He's in his full gear at some outdoor rink in Montana. But Sid's the man, really. Like, he's been a great ambassador. I think he's a little bit untouchable. Forgive him if he missed opening night of All-Star festivities. Again, Frank takes a pretty good run at him on social media. You can find that on Twitter. Look for Frank Cervalli and Sidney Crosby. I tweeted about it too, but we'll sell that. Also, hey, Farhan Lalji, TSN.
Sell, sell, sell.
Great football reporter. Knows football, very well connected. Breaks all the signings in the CFL. But hockey, not his expertise, we'll say. Does cover the Canucks, though, for TSN. We had a back and forth on Twitter. I think it was a respectful back and forth about this potential CHL-NCAA agreement and why he didn't like it. And again, I don't know Farhan. I think I might have met him at a BC Lions camp, but it wasn't anything more than a hello. I didn't agree with his takes, and neither did a lot of people. Some of his comments just didn't match with the facts on hand about, you know, who this would benefit and who it would hurt. And you can find that all on Twitter. Again, mind you, he's covering Super Bowl this week, so he's doing this, you know, kind of off the backside of whatever else he has going on down in Vegas. But we'll playfully sell those two sports figures today. I'm buying our guest this week. That was a great chat with Jared Allen. Who do you want me to get on the Blaze? I'm going to ask you, who do you want? Be it Blazer alumni, sports figures, who do you want to hear from? In the podcast each and every week. Tweet at me, text me, do whatever you need to do, get a hold of me. Hey, I'm selling.
Sell, sell, sell.
Selling Kamloops gas prices. Why are we 20 cents higher than anywhere on most given days? Like, we came back from Prince George Sunday, and I'm passing stations like in that Caribou corridor, like Clinton, 100 Mile, like 136. I'm sure I saw 136 or something crazy like that. And then you get into Kamloops, it's like 153. And then this week it's jacked up to over 160, like 164. Like, we're always higher. Even if you go like up the road through like Falkland into Vernon, we're always way higher than that. So I'm selling the gas prices in Kamloops. And that is buying and selling. Kyle Panasik, Westwind, Royal LePage, Realty Kamloops.
You've got mail.
Okay, fan mail, let's get into it for the Mattress King. And let's jump right into it. Steven at The Slice, hello to you. He says, how fun has it been to watch our young team overachieve in the last 8 games versus expect to win most games last year? You know what? I think it's been great for this stretch, especially when, you know, expectations after the trade deadline have not been very high. But I guess you could say you can get used to winning and you can also get used to losing. And the transition on the other side of that, be it a couple of games, is sometimes difficult and or exhilarating, depending on what side you're in on it. Last year, the Blazers expected to win, right? You win games, you go into, you know, a place where you're supposed to win by a bunch, and you do. And it's just like, ho-hum, it's expected. But when you win games you're maybe not expected to, or on paper you're overmatched, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. You can play a bit of a spoiler role. But I'm sure you're enjoying this as well, Stephen. Frazzle at Frazzle Sports. What's it like navigating between game call locations at various WHL rinks? He goes, at some rinks you have your own little box, and in places like Portland, you're in the middle of the fans' seats, in a line with other commentators. Also, do you hate being forced to sit? Yes, I am. I'm a stand-up guy when it comes to calling games. Anyways, like motion creates emotion. So you want to be up. You want to be, you know, be active with your hands and your arms, and you know, you want to create emotion. And you do that with motion. So it's tough to sit. And I think you're referencing Portland, where you sort of sit between two sections of fans. They're right there in front of you, beside you, around you, and you have to sit down all game. Well, I guess you could stand, but you're going to, you know, piss off some people behind you for sure. It's a really weird league, Frazzle, when it comes to that. Sometimes you have your nice booth like Kamloops and like Edmonton and Calgary and, you know, some of these places. But sometimes, yeah, you're just kind of in a makeshift press box, and it is odd. For sure. Especially when, like, used to be able to go to Vancouver Pacific Coliseum and, you know, fans would hear you talking about the game. You do your goal call. They'd all be turned around looking at you. And it's a bit awkward. You're Prince George, you're right on top of the fans. Seattle, right on top of the fans as well. So I do like that little bit of separation for sure. But you get a real better sense, I think, of the game's emotion when you're like right down in the heat of the battle with the fans in there. But good question. Nathan Ryder at Nathan Ryder 14. Assuming the standings hold as they are now, and with the way the WHL lottery operates, only the bottom three teams will get a chance at that first overall pick, and he says that will be certainly Landon DuPont. He goes, where would I like to see him land? Well, Blazers don't own their first pick, and he makes that point out. So he goes, what would you rather see? In Prince Albert via Seattle, Everett via Kamloops, or Edmonton? I don't know. I think there's something about, you know, Edmonton having their own pick, being able to step to the podium and draft the Albertan player out of Calgary up to Edmonton. And that'll be a high-profile spot for Landon DuPont in an NHL market, for sure. Great broadcast, place to broadcast games for, so he does anything special. It's sort of got that NHL feel to it. So I guess of those three, well, I know where it's not. I don't want to see. That's Everett via the Blazer pick. So I guess we'll go with Edmonton if there is a choice to be had there. Cam Redekop, last year, it was the Ice in Seattle as top contenders. This year, the Blades and Portland, Everett, PG. Who do you think will be the top contenders out of each conference next season? That is a good question, Cam. Well, let me see here. In the West, Portland will take a step back. PG, you know what? They held a lot of their bullets. They're hoping that they can get some players back as 20-year-olds next season to kind of continue this year, make it a two-year sort of run. And for all the lack of activity at the trade deadline, they can still make moves next year. So I think PG probably has enough coming back to extend this to another year. I think out east, that's a really good question. Won't be Moose Jaw, won't be Saskatoon, won't be Swift Current. It'll be Medicine Hat. That's probably who it'll be out there. Medicine Hat, their year, likely next year, to take another big step. So right now, as it stands, those teams, Everett, I think, will still, again, it'll depend on who comes back as 20-year-olds for the Silvertips, but that's a bit of a handful of who I think. On Patrol the Sheriff, do you ever reflect on the 22 playoffs and wonder if the Blazers ever regret not going more all-in that year with the Memorial Cup bid in mind for next year? Looking back on it, he says, it seems that was a much more winnable year. Yeah, you know what? If I do reflect on anything, again, last year, hands were a bit tied with the fact the Blazers could not use their assets. 2 years ago, I guess now. Could not use their assets. They picked up Luke Toporowski, who was fantastic for them, and got all the way to the conference final. Edmonton was the big juggernaut that year, and they won the league title. They were the team that loaded up with all the world junior caliber. If I ever do reflect on anything on Patrol, it's probably the 2019-20 season, cut short from COVID. That was a really good team. Young Dylan Garand in goal, yes, 17. But that team could play any way you wanted to play. A young Logan Stankoven, Caden Bankier, Matt Semenoff were the 16s. Zane Franklin, Connor Zeri, Oren Santazo, the toughest customer in the league, and on Montana, Onyebuchi. It had it all. Ryan Hughes, Max Martin. Boy, that was a good team. That team had the potential to win it all, for sure. Probably would have ran into like a tough Everett or Spokane team at some point. But they were poised to play Kelowna in the first round that year. I think that was already locked in stone. And then, of course, we all know what happened. Guido at, what's the handle on this here? Not sure how to say your last name, Guido, so we'll leave it off. So he says, why haven't the Kelowna Rockets been super good this year, even with Crystal and Stutz running the show for them? It's more than two players, and I think Kelowna, their concern lately anyways, has been goals against. You know, they had 8 up against in Spokane. It was 11 in Portland. So that's really been, I think, their focus. And when those two players go into a mini slump like they are, Regan Bartel did a little article about that. When they go into a bit of a slump, then that's when, you know, you can struggle when a lot of your offense comes from the same group of players. So I don't know. I don't think Kelowna was picked to be like a world beater this year. Probably were picked to be in the middle of the conference, and that's kind of where they are. They sit, what, is it sixth, seventh? They're tied with Vancouver right now, 6-7. And Brotherhood of Blazer goaltenders named Dylan. Good question this week. He goes, what was the thought process in trading up and picking Nathan Boehm? He goes, think we might have got a good one there. Okay, that's an interesting story, actually. The Blazers traded up to get him at number 13. And they did so with Saskatoon. Blazers had to give up their first-round pick, plus a third and a sixth. So the price was high. And I did ask about this. And word is Nathan Boehm charted very good analytically. And the Blazers had sort of a line in the sand. If these certain players fall to this spot, we need to make a move. And be it, you know, like I equate it to like, you know, when you're watching an NFL game and it's 4th and 2 and the team's at the 30-yard line. And what do the analytics say? They say go for it. So it's almost like that's what pointed the Blazers in that direction. The analytics say go for it. So they made the move. And I tell you, it was a bold move for sure. And he is getting better and better. They liked how he looked in big games. I think what the scouting staff had said. So they traded up to 13 and snagged him. There's a lot of good players in that draft here, in that first round. So that's how it all played out. I thought it was really interesting, you know, hearing the story about if it gets to a certain point, if these players are available, it's probably Boehm and maybe one or two others, make a move. And they did. That's fan mail for the Mattress King. All right, let's wrap up for another week on the Blaze. It's closing remarks. It's for Pleasure Pools Plus. Check out their massive roster of affordable H2O, Cal, Sundance Spas. They do hot tub repairs, service, and advice. Talk to Len Sari and their staff today. And what do we got this weekend? Home at home Kelowna. Blazers so far, they've won 3 of 4 against the Rockets. Kelowna's going to come in a little bit ornery, I would say, based on the fact that they felt that they were on paper the better team a couple weeks ago and just got the 1 point out of the two game set. So Kelowna Super Bowl. Who do we got for the Super Bowl on Sunday? I don't know. I really don't know. It's going to be a good game. I'm like an over under guy. I'm not like a pick a winner. I'm not good at picking a winner, so I won't make a prediction here. But I'll likely indulge in a few sprinkles throughout the game and see if I can win enough to buy dinner Monday night or by Valentine's dinner, right? Yeah, that's what we'll try to do. So, folks, hope you enjoyed the show this week. Want to say big thanks to our guest, Jared Allen. What a Blazer he was. What a pro career. And now just some great insight on family, on hockey, on life. And we want to wish him and his wife and his two kids and their two dogs and everybody in the Allen household well as we get into the springtime. Thanks for popping by again, everybody. Thanks for all the questions and the feedback. Really, really love doing the show each and every week. It can be a lot of work, but I think the reward is there in hearing from the fans and our sponsors and, you know, just hearing that other people around the league are tuned in and listening and have their thoughts as well. So that's going to do it for us, everybody. It is episode 20 in the books for River Shore Golf Links.